Good morning, and welcome to the J. M. Smucker Company's fourth quarter 2016 earnings conference call. This conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. Please limit yourself to two initial questions during the Q&A session, and re-queue if you then have additional questions. I will now turn the conference call over to Aaron Broholm, Vice President, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us on our fourth quarter earnings conference call. With me today and presenting our prepared remarks are Richard Smucker, Executive Chairman, Mark Smucker, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mark Belgia, Chief Financial Officer. Also joining us for the Q&A portion of the call are Steve Oakland, President, U.S. Food and Beverage, and Barry Dunaway, President, Pet Food and Pet Snacks. Vince Berg, Vice Chairman, is also on the line from another location. During this conference call, we will make forward-looking statements that reflect the company's current expectations about future plans and performance. These statements rely on a number of assumptions and estimates, and actual results may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties. I encourage you to read the full disclosure statement in this morning's press release concerning forward-looking statements. Additionally, please note the company uses non-GAAP results for the purpose of evaluating performance internally, as detailed in the press release, which is located on our corporate website at jmsmucker.com. As we indicated earlier in the calendar year, we are transitioning to one non-GAAP earnings per share metric in 2017, which excludes non-cash intangible amortization. We will refer to this as adjusted EPS. Amortization expense will also be removed from our definition of segment profit, as well as non-GAAP operating income and net income. We will file a Form 8K later this quarter to recast prior year segment results to reflect the new definition. We have posted to our website a couple of supplementary slides, including a bridge from our fiscal 2016 results to our fiscal 2017 adjusted EPS guidance. These slides can be accessed through the link to the webcast of this call. This document and a replay of this call will be archived on our website. If you have any questions after today's call, please contact me. I will now turn the call over to Richard.
Thank you, Aaron. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Fiscal 2016 was a dynamic and exciting year for the Smucker Company as our teams delivered on a number of key strategic initiatives. These included significantly improving the performance of our coffee business, reflecting the launch of the Dunkin' Donuts K-Cups, and returning momentum to our mainstream coffee business, expanding distribution for our Natural Balance pet brand, executing a seamless integration of the pet food business, exceeding our synergy and working capital targets for the year, divesting our U.S. canned milk business, all resulting in record financial performance and earnings and cash flow that exceeded our expectations. Let me expand on the results for the year. Net sales increased 37% to $7.8 billion, reflecting the full-year contribution of Big Heart Pet Brand. Excluding acquisitions, divestitures, and foreign exchange, sales increased 3% for the full year. Non-GAAP operating income was up 49% to $1.28 billion, with the contributions from pet and strong coffee segment profit growth being the key drivers. Non-GAAP earnings per share were $6.57. Including a one-time 42 cent per share non-cash benefit. This compares to our most recent guidance of $5.84 to $5.94, which excluded the tax benefit. Lastly, the company generated free cash flow of $1.26 billion, which is well above our original estimate. Reflecting this strong cash flow, we exceeded our deleveraging objective for the year, reducing total debt by nearly $750 million. We also returned over $750 million of cash to shareholders in the form of share repurchases and dividends. There were numerous accomplishments during the past fiscal year, and this performance is a testament to the dedication of our employees, and we thank them for their continued efforts. We are well positioned to continue this momentum into fiscal 2017. Since the last time we spoke to many of you, we announced several executive appointments that are consistent with the company's history of long-term succession planning and the development of leadership to meet the current and future needs of our business and the constituents that we serve. Effective May 1st, Mark Smucker assumed the role of President and Chief Executive Officer. Mark and his experienced leadership team embody the values that have contributed to the company's success and long-term growth. I am confident that under their direction, the company will continue to innovate, evolve, and grow in the years to come. It's been an honor to serve as CEO of the Smucker Company, and I'm grateful to have worked alongside the most talented team in the industry. I will continue to serve the company as executive chairman. Among other areas, my efforts will be focused on board-related matters, counsel and advice on strategic decisions, enhancing customer relationships, and advancing our industry leadership efforts. My brother Tim has been appointed to the role of Chairman Emeritus, and we also look forward to his continued contributions. Lastly, I would like to recognize Vince Byrd, who is participating in his final earnings call as his retirement after 39 years with the company is effective tomorrow. Vince's contributions have helped shape the company that we are today and will continue to be reflected in the numerous employees that he has mentored throughout his career. With that, I'll turn the call over to Mark.
Thank you, Richard. Good morning, everyone. As you know, our company is unique in being led by only six CEOs in its 119-year history. I am honored to succeed Richard as CEO and serve as a steward of this great company. Richard has led our company through a period of significant expansion and strategic transformation. As a result, our company is stronger than ever. I am excited to lead our talented team, leveraging the continued counsel of Richard, Dad, and our outstanding board to drive continued growth and shareholder value. I also would like to echo Richard's comments about Vince and thank him for his contributions and mentorship. The focus of my comments today will be to provide an update on our business segments, including additional color on full year 2016 performance and initial thoughts on fiscal 2017. I'll start with our coffee business, which far exceeded expectations for the year. Net sales were up 8% and segment profit increased 18% to $646 million, representing a full recovery of the segment profit decline in the prior year. This outperformance was driven by several factors, including the successful launch of Dunkin' Donuts K-Cups, the implementation of the planned Folgers canister downsize, a moderation in competitive activities, and the net benefit of lower commodity costs and pricing. Providing lower pricing on Folgers roast and ground coffee resulted in improved performance for our mainstream coffee business in 2016. Tonnage for our mainstream brands was up 3%, while units shipped were up even more, given the canister downsize early in the fiscal year. In addition, our dollar share within the mainstream segment of the coffee category increased nearly 2 share points to 55% for the latest 52-week period. We anticipate momentum in the coffee business to continue in 2017. Key initiatives include Folgers' sponsorship of the U.S. Olympic team for the upcoming Rio Games, with marketing activities already underway. In addition, last month we implemented a 6% list price decline across much of our coffee portfolio, reflecting sustained lower green coffee costs. These lower costs have been reflected in promotional pricing for the past several quarters, and we do not anticipate promoted prices changing significantly. With regards to Folgers K-Cups, in 2016, the brand was impacted by the ongoing proliferation of entrants in the K-Cup space, including our introduction of Dunkin' K-Cups. This year, we will invest further in the product line to improve trends, including lower pricing and new packaging that will leverage the iconic Folgers Red Can brand equity. Turning to the Dunkin' Donuts brand, Dunkin' K-Cups achieved nearly $220 million in retail sales for the latest 52-week scan period and gained a 6% dollar share of the K-Cup market, giving us an overall share of nearly 15% in the K-Cup segment. In its first year on the market, the Dunkin' Donuts original SKU has become the number one K-Cup item in the channels in which we participate. As consumer repeat rates remain strong and with opportunities to introduce additional varieties, we anticipate further growth in 2017. While challenged for much of 2016, performance improved for Dunkin' Donuts bagged coffee during the fourth quarter. Supported by favorable input costs, we have sharpened pricing to improve gaps to key competitors, and we look for positive volume trends to continue. Lastly, within coffee, the Cafe Bustelo brand experienced a second consecutive year of double-digit sales growth behind strong performance for both roast and ground and K-Cup offerings. This exciting on-trend brand remains well-received by millennials, and its growth is expected to continue also in 2017. Turning to consumer foods, net sales declined 3% for the year, mostly due to lapping sales from the divested canned milk business. Segment profit was flat to prior year, supported by the gain on the milk business sale, which offset planned increases in manufacturing overhead costs. Looking briefly at the key brands, we are pleased with the overall performance of our spreads business, as both Jif Peanut Butter and Smucker's Fruit Spreads grew volume share over the latest 52-week period. In addition, Smucker's Uncrustables frozen sandwiches had another strong year, with volume up 26%, including a 17th consecutive quarter of double-digit volume growth in this most recent fourth quarter. On-trend innovation continues to be a focus area for the iconic Jif and Smucker's brands. In fiscal 2017, we look to build on recent successful launches such as Smucker's Fruit and Honey Fruit Spreads and Jif Snack Bars. This includes the upcoming introduction of new snack bar varieties and plans to expand into other snacking platforms. In addition, Jif, Smucker's, and Uncrustables are all participating in the 2016 Olympic sponsorship, which will be an integral part of this year's marketing efforts for the brands. In the bake aisle, the overall category remained challenged throughout much of this past year, reflecting changing consumer preferences and aggressive competitive pricing. Our focus remains on providing value-added innovation, such as our recent gluten-free and simple ingredient offerings. We are also excited to announce a licensing arrangement with the Girl Scouts of America. Under this agreement, we are launching new Pillsbury items featuring iconic Girl Scout cookie flavors. Within natural foods, our leading R.W. Knudsen family and Santa Cruz organic brands both achieved solid sales growth in 2016. The key natural foods categories in which our brands participate are growing, which gives us confidence in maintaining our momentum in this business. We are also excited about our recent investment in the Numi brand and the opportunities this provides in the organic tea category. Under our first year of ownership, pet food segment profit of $392 million was generally in line with expectations. Net sales of $2.25 billion fell 1% short of the projections provided at our October Investor Day due to competitive challenges in mainstream dry dog food. For the year, mainstream pet food sales decreased mid-single digits, reflecting double-digit declines in dog food and a low single-digit decline for the larger cat food business. Offsetting the lower mainstream sales was the strong performance of our pet snacks business, which was up mid-single digits over the prior year, and our premium pet food brands, which grew double digits behind expanded distribution of the Natural Balance brand. As we enter 2017, we anticipate continued growth for Natural Balance as we launch the brand's first national marketing campaign, along with additional in-store support. Within pet snacks, innovation for the Milk-Bone and Meow Mix brands were key contributors to 2016 results, and we expect to see on these to build on these trends with new product introductions this fiscal year. We also continue to focus on opportunities in mainstream pet food driven by consumer preference for additional protein and natural ingredients. Lastly, within the segment, we are excited about our partnership and planned in-store activities related to the animated film, The Secret Life of Pets, which will be in theaters next month. Turning to international and food service, we are pleased with the full year results, despite the significant top and bottom line impacts of foreign currency. Reported net sales were in line with the prior year, as the addition of the pet food business and the benefit of higher net pricing in Canada offset a $60 million top line impact related to foreign exchange. Segment profit was up 12%, mostly attributable to food service. The introduction of Smucker's Uncrustables into school lunch programs contributed to this growth. The strong underlying performance of our Canadian business was mostly offset by the impact of foreign exchange. Let me conclude with an update on our integration and cost savings activities. We successfully achieved our March 1 integration milestone for the pet food business and recognized just over $35 million in synergies for 2016. In addition, we have clear visibility and confidence in realizing an incremental $100 million in synergies this fiscal year. In total, this would provide approximately $135 million in synergies for 2017. Looking ahead, we remain confident in achieving our original goal of $200 million in annual synergies by the end of fiscal 2018. In addition to the $200 million of synergies, we are targeting $50 million of incremental annual cost savings to be fully realized over the next few years. Related projects include further optimizing our manufacturing footprint, as over the next 18 months, we will close a coffee facility in Harahan, Louisiana, and two leased natural foods facilities located in Livermore, California, with production being consolidated into existing operations. In addition, we are nearly complete with an organizational redesign aimed at further optimizing corporate resources, contributing to this cost savings target. We expect to initially invest much of these incremental savings in several identified areas. We will continue to prioritize investments that generate top and bottom line growth for key on-trend platforms. In fiscal 2017, these include opportunities related to Smucker's Uncrustables, coffee, and snacks. We are also establishing a new growth and innovation organization, which is being led by a member of my leadership team. The group is being tasked with further building capabilities related to consumer and market insights digital, innovation, targeted market development strategies for our customers, including pricing and trade spend optimization. Lastly, we plan to invest in new growth opportunities to expand our presence in China. In closing, 2016 was a historic year for our company, and I would like to thank our employees for their efforts. As we enter 2017, key priorities include achieving our synergy goals, building on our product innovation activities, and investing in new capabilities to enhance future growth. Overall, we remain confident in our long-term strategy, the strength of our brands, and our ability to deliver shareholder value in 2017 and beyond. I will now turn the call over to Mark Belgia.
Thank you, Mark, and good morning, everyone. I will begin by providing commentary on our fourth quarter results, followed by 2016 cash flow performance, and ending with our 2017 outlook. We concluded the fiscal year with strong fourth quarter earnings. Non-GAAP earnings per share were $1.86 for the quarter, including a one-time 42-cent per share non-cash deferred tax benefit related to the integration of Big Heart into the Smucker company, as was previewed during our third quarter call. This strong finish to the year was mostly attributable to coffee, including higher-than-anticipated volume across our mainstream and premium coffee brands and a favorable price-to-cost relationship. The comparison of fourth quarter earnings between years is significantly impacted by one-time items reported in each of the respective periods. These include the deferred tax benefit in the current year, as well as the Big Heart acquisition and financing-related activities in the prior year. As a result, the remainder of my fourth quarter commentary will be focused on the business segments. Beginning with coffee, fourth quarter net sales grew 9%, as favorable volume mix of 13% was only partially offset by lower net pricing. Sales for the Dunkin' Donuts brand doubled over the prior year, with K-Cups driving much of this growth. Double-digit gains for bagged Dunkin' Donuts coffee also contributed. For the Folgers brand, net sales declined 5%, attributable to lower net price realization. And lastly, Cafe Bustelo's sales were up 28% as the momentum for this brand continues. Segment profit increased $43 million, or 39%. We recognized lower green coffee costs in the quarter, which were partially offset by lower net pricing. In addition, higher volume mix more than offset the increase in marketing. Turning to consumer foods, net sales were up 5%, excluding the impact of the canned milk divestiture, with gains across the majority of our key brands. Sales for Jif grew 14% behind higher volume and net pricing, while the Smucker's brand was up 3% as Uncrustables had another strong quarter. In the bake aisle, sales for Crisco increased 6% driven by higher volume. And lastly, sales for the Pillsbury brand were up modestly as higher price realization offset volume declines. Segment profit declined 6%, mostly attributable to lapping the prior year earnings of the divested milk business. Planned increases in manufacturing overhead costs also contributed, reflecting the new peanut butter facility in Memphis, as well as underabsorbed overhead costs related to our working capital initiatives. These factors offset lower marketing expense. Net sales for our U.S. retail pet food segments were $563 million. We estimate this represents an approximate 3% increase compared to the prior year fourth quarter, of which 6 weeks were reported under our ownership. Sales for our premium pet prep brands grew low double digits driven by Natural Balance, while pet snack sales increased in line with the overall segment. Mainstream pet food sales were flat compared to the prior year as growth in our cat food brands offset declines in dog food. Pet food segment profit was $117 million for the quarter. As expected, we realized a sequential increase in segment profit margin from 17% in the third quarter to 20.7% this quarter, primarily reflecting lower marketing expense. Incremental synergy recognition also contributed. Net sales for international and food service increased 1% in the quarter, reflecting higher volume mix in food service. In Canada, the addition of pet food was essentially offset by the impact of FX. Segment profit was up 8% over the prior year, driven by our food service business, partially offset by the impact of foreign exchange in Canada. Free cash flow was $295 million for the quarter, bringing the 2016 total to $1.26 billion. The outperformance compared to our most recent free cash flow guidance of $975 million was attributable to exceeding our 2016 working capital improvement target, lower than projected CapEx spending, a fourth quarter tax refund of $53 million, which is separate from the deferred tax adjustment impacting earnings, and higher net income. Expanding on our working capital initiatives, in 2016, we realized the majority of our finished goods inventory reduction goal of $200 million, nearly a year ahead of schedule. In 2017, we expect to achieve the remainder of the inventory reduction target, along with modest working capital improvements related to accounts payable and receivables, all of which are factored into our 2017 free cash flow outlook I will discuss in a moment. We ended the year with debt of $5.4 billion. Based on 2016 EBITDA of $1.58 billion, our leverage stood at 3.4 times at April 30th, a reduction from 4.1 times at the beginning of the year. In addition to exceeding our debt paydown target for the year, we were able to restart share repurchase activities, aided by the strong free cash flow and proceeds from the divestiture of the milk business. During the fourth quarter, we repurchased nearly 3% of shares outstanding for approximately $430 million. In 2017, the lower share count will offset the EPS impact of the 8 months of lost profit related to the divested milk business. Turning to our 2017 outlook, we anticipate reported net sales to decrease by 1% compared to the prior year, as we will lap approximately $150 million in sales related to the milk divestiture. Excluding this impact, net sales are projected to be up 1%. Favorable volume mix across each of the segments, including the benefit of new products, is expected to be mostly offset by lower pricing in U.S. retail coffee and FX in Canada. Approximately $25 million of the incremental $100 million of synergies for 2017 are expected to benefit gross profit. Overall commodity costs are anticipated to be lower. However, our Canadian business is estimating a COGS headwind of $20 million related to FX, of which a portion is expected to be offset. As a result, we expect gross margin to approximate 39% in 2017. Further, SD&A expenses are projected to be comparable to the prior year. This reflects the benefit of incremental synergies related to headcount reductions and other administrative cost savings, offset by increased marketing in support of recently launched products, our Olympic sponsorship, innovation, and regulatory expenses. We're projecting non-GAAP operating income growth of 4% in 2017 compared to $1.465 billion in the prior year, which excludes amortization and the prior year gain on sale of $25 million. Further, excluding the $32 million of profit in last year's operating income related to the divested milk business, the growth would be 6%. Below operating income, we expect net interest expense of approximately $165 million and a tax rate of 34%. And lastly, a weighted average share count of 116.6 million shares was used based on current shares outstanding. Factoring in all of this, we are guiding 2017 adjusted EPS in the range of $7.60 to $7.75, which excludes $1.18 per share of estimated non-cash amortization. Including amortization, this yields a range of $6.42 to $6.57, compared to a 2016 base of $6. This results in year-over-year increases ranging from 7% to 10%. As illustrated on the document posted on our website, we derived the $6 EPS for 2016 by subtracting the 42-cent deferred tax adjustment and the 15-cent milk gain from our reported non-GAAP EPS of $6.57. We anticipate much of the EPS growth for the year to be weighted toward the middle two quarters of the fiscal year due to certain factors. Last year's first quarter included the launch of Dunkin' K-Cups. Also within coffee, this year's first quarter will be unfavorably impacted due to timing associated with the full quarter impact of the price decrease taken in July of 2015, along with the additional price decline taken in May of this year, as compared to the recognition of lower cost. Other factors impacting quarterly comparison include the timing of synergy recognition, the time impact related to trade spend recognition on a quarterly basis, and finally, the fourth quarter comparison to this year's strong fourth quarter finish. Looking briefly at the segments, coffee profits are projected to be comparable to the record fiscal 2016 level. For consumer foods, reported segment profit is expected to be down given the prior year gain on the milk divestiture and the lost milk profits, but up mid-single digits when these items are excluded. Pet food segment profit is also projected to be up mid-single digits, reflecting incremental synergies and organic growth, including the contributions of new products. And lastly, international and food service is anticipated to be down, primarily reflecting the net impact of FX in Canada. We project free cash flow will approximate $1 billion, from which we plan to pay down debt and further reduce leverage to 3.1 times by the end of this fiscal year. This assumes projected 2017 EBITDA of $1.63 billion. Additional assumptions related to 2017 include amortization expense of nearly $210 million, depreciation of $215 million, share-based compensation expense of $35 million, capital expenditures of $240 million, and lastly, one-time cost of $100 million, which are mostly cash-related. In closing, we are very pleased with our overall performance in 2016 as it marked a memorable year in our company's history. It is with this momentum and excitement that we look forward to executing our plans for 2017 as we remain focused on delivering continued growth. We thank you for your time, and we will now open up the call to your questions. Operator, if you would please queue up the first question.
Thank you. The question and answer session will begin at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick the handset up before pressing any numbers. Should you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. For operator assistance, please press star 0. As a reminder, please limit yourself to 2 questions during the Q&A session. Should you have additional questions, you may re-queue, and the company will take questions as time allows. Please stand by for the first question. Our first question comes from Andrew Lazar with Barclays. Your line is open.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Just, I guess, a quick one for me. In thinking about the underlying EPS growth guidance for fiscal 17, as you pointed out, it's roughly 7 to 10% or so. And I guess, you know, you've talked about base EPS growth in the sort of the 10% range, I think, for 17 and 18. So I'm just trying to get a sense of what leads to the, call it that 8% at the midpoint type of growth range. Is it just conservatism? Is it, you know, coffee outperformed pretty dramatically this year, and therefore, you know, we need to just tailor that back a little bit in our expectations for 17, or things that I haven't mentioned. Just trying to put that in perspective.
Hey, Andrew, this is Mark Belger. Thank you for the question. What I would say is, as Mark and I think we reiterated, we will deliver the $100 million in synergies. We have a clear line of sight on that. Where we're landing sort of that 8% is we are having a significant increase in marketing spend for the coming year, obviously with the sponsorship of the Olympics and reestablishing some of the marketing spend from this year. So that is the biggest driver. I think in terms of the coffee, I would put that more in the category of where we might land in the range. Obviously, we did have a strong year and we need things to continue. We feel good about that, but that's probably a factor that comes into play a little bit as well. And then the other one, probably to a lesser degree, is just the FX impact. As I mentioned, you know, we're having about a $20 million headwind, and we hope to cover at least half of that, but there's a little bit of that affecting as well.
Got it. Thanks for that. And then just a very quick one. I noticed that distribution expense, I think, as a percent of sales was just much lower than it, I guess, typically is this quarter. Just trying to get a sense of why that is, and is that a sort of a more sustainable level? Thank you.
You know, Andrew, what that might be is that I think as we are aligning the Big Heart, basically the Big Heart P&L, where certain things fall in, costs that probably were considered distribution might just have been moved. But we can follow up if there's something significantly different from that response.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Driscoll with Citigroup. Your line is open.
Great. Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. Richard, congratulations on your retirement. And Mark, what a big day. Congratulations here for you. And I guess it was May 1st, but for us, it feels like today. So congratulations, guys. And Vince, all the best. Wanted to ask a follow-up on Andrew's question on the guidance. So, Mark, a different way to look at this would be to say that $100 million of synergies, I think that number alone gets you something like 57 cents a share in incremental EPS benefit in 2017, and that gets you to kind of the top end of the range. So maybe could you try to answer just slightly differently and just say that if synergies kind of gets you just to the top end of the range, doesn't it suggest that the rest of the operations are really, you know, on balance, flattish? I know there's a share count benefit. There's milk dilution that goes on in there, but it still just seems like the underlying expectation of the core X to synergies is basically flat.
Yeah, you know, David, it's interesting because we've obviously went through that same line of thought, and the way I would describe it is that you're exactly right. The $100 million and the 57-cent delivery, the marketing increase, I will tell you, is a significant increase there. We are up. So we feel very comfortable to be able to invest those marketing dollars back in the business. So there's a little bit of a discussion here on whether or not the business is flat from a performance perspective or it's flat because we've invested in the marketing. We would choose the latter, saying that the marketing increase is offsetting some of that to some degree. The other thing is, as I think Mark suggested in his scripted comments, is that we are also investing in innovation and growth and also in China. So obviously those dollars are embedded in the business portion of it when you just separate it between synergy and non-synergy. So you can draw the conclusion that it's coming from the business, but those are the two or three factors, marketing, innovation, and investment in China, and a little bit of FX, as I mentioned, that are really kind of bringing that number back down.
Okay, and then for my second question on coffee, you know, back at your analyst day, and I believe Steve had said that, you know, it would be to like 2019 before the company recovered the profitability seen in 2014. I think as of today, you've already recovered the profits. So maybe just kind of two subtle questions in here. You know, why does this outperform so much relative to the expectation? And then what I really care about is how does this impact, you know, kind of going forward? I mean, you had a very different outlook on how profits were going to move in this business. I'm not complaining, by the way. This is really wonderful that the profits are up so much. But I think we all kind of then worry that the massive outperformance in coffee profits in 16 will somehow, you know, retard the ability of profits to grow in 17. Was that clear, guys?
I think it is, David. Hi, Steve Oakland. Let's talk about the coffee business briefly. If you think about the numbers, we did get there a year or two ahead of what we guided, right? And we got there on two things, really. And the most obvious one is the launch of Dunkin' K-Cups. And we all know that, you know, that was one of the best launches in consumer products in the last 5 years, right? So that was a wonderful performance. But really, more importantly, financially, if you look at the performance of our core red can business, and that's an effort that started, you know, 2 years ago. I mean, in the year that we struggled in our coffee business, Mark and his team went back and did the downsize and started those processes. And then we had an opportunity in this last year to get coffee pricing right, to have both a manufacturing and a hedging strategy, to get this thing, to get it to price points that both excited the retailer and the consumer. And the retailer is a key piece of this. You got to get that merchandising support. So we're really pleased with where we are there. I think you saw, I'm sure you saw, our press release on pricing that we just took. So with all of that behind us, we feel pretty comfortable that we can repeat that performance. And to your comment earlier, that will be repeating a record performance. We actually beat the 2014 number this year, right? So on our red can and our core business and our Dunkin' business, our Dunkin' K-Cup business, we feel really good. Sort of lost in that, though, this year was the two segments that didn't perform as well as we wanted to, and that's our business in premium and our legacy K-Cup, our Folgers K-Cup business. So what we intend to do this year is do the same things to those. And so the pricing, we leaned in early on the Dunkin' bag business. You saw some of that performance in the fourth quarter. We feel great about that going into this quarter. So we need to put ourselves back on premium growth momentum. We will invest to do that. And we need to make sure as the K-Cup segment shakes out, and it will shake out. I mean, there's so many new items. There's so much going on there. That the velocities on our core legacy items are strong, and we invested right at the end of the quarter in that as well. So I guess I'm saying we feel comfortable we can repeat the record results in Red Can. The Dunkin' K-Cup business will be very solid this year. And then with what we have extra on there, we're going to invest in those other two segments. So I would hope we come out of the coffee business firing on all cylinders versus firing just on those two big ones next year.
Hey, David,
very thorough answer.
David, this is Richard Smucker. Two quick comments. One, from a 50,000 square foot level, our 70 to 80% of our business has really good momentum, and we're firing on all eight cylinders. We're using that opportunity to make, as Mark said, investments in our business for the future, not just for next year but beyond, and this gives us the opportunity to do that. We're not making these numbers by cutting marketing expenses, and it gives us the opportunity to invest back in these businesses and these brands. So I think you need to look at it from that high level. We do, and that's driving a lot of our business. It's also positioning us well for growth in the future, not just in next year but beyond. And then finally, I don't like the word retirement, so I just want to let you know that. I am not retiring. I'm just moving to a different role, and most of the family's eggs are in one nest, and we're watching that nest very carefully. So,
Richard, that was a wonderful comment, and we certainly don't want you going anywhere. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate the answers.
All right.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chris Groh with Stifel. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Hi. I just want to ask first, if I could, please, on coffee, just to understand with the list price decline and having reached some of these promoted price points in fiscal 16 as input costs came down, I guess I'm just trying to understand, you know, why coffee profits wouldn't be stronger in the year than the flat expectation. And also related to that, would they be stronger in the first half or perhaps more challenged in the second half as you start to lap some of that? Just curious if you can give a little more help on the kind of the phasing there, if that would be a factor for our models.
Okay, I'll start that, Chris, Steve Oakland, and then maybe Mark can help me on how we look at the seasonality of the profits. If you go back to the fourth quarter, of 2014 when coffee prices hit like $2.20 a pound, right, Arabica, then we saw it come down basically a dollar a pound over that time. It's bumped up in the last day or so a little bit, but if you think about that, the fastest, most efficient way to get that pricing to the consumer was with trade. Okay, we can impact shelf price on a promoted period immediately with trade.
Yep.
Okay, so in the short term, that's very efficient. In the long term, it's very inefficient because it promotes all kinds of buy-in and load-in, all this inefficiency in the system, right? So over the last year, we've taken a couple of list price declines to mitigate that, to make the promotional allowance depth less. So we've leaned in to current coffee pricing on our promotional price points, and now this has allowed us to sort of drain that out, get a better list price to promoted price ratio so that our everyday prices get better and we maintain the current pricing. So we tried to make that clear in the release that we did. To give a little more clarity on that this time. So the costs have been reflected in total coffee pricing. This does it, I think, over the long term in a more efficient manner.
This is Mark Smucker. The only other thing I would add, Steve, is just that from a commodity standpoint, if you just look at the trends on coffee costs, the decline that we've experienced has gone on for, 9 months, at least 12 months. So you have seen this very consistent, sustained lower coffee cost, and that has allowed us to behave properly or responsibly, if you will, because we have had consistency in our underlying cost structure.
And then, Chris, this is Mark Belge. I guess just in terms of the seasonality, if you will, of your question, you know, we are going to be lapping last year's first quarter pricing move. And as Steve mentioned, we had this year price decline. So, you know, we have the full effect of basically two price declines. So while the costs are certainly going to be lower than they were a year ago, those price declines, along with the way some of the trade will hit through the quarters, will probably, you know, negatively impact the first quarter and then obviously balance itself out through the rest of the year.
Right. And that's really how those things hit, not the volumes. We feel good about where the sell-through and the volume numbers are, but just how the pricing hits versus a year ago and how we recognize trade in those periods may soften the first quarter a little bit.
Okay, that's a good thorough answer. Thank you for that. And just I had just one quick follow-up, if I could. Without Eric Katzman on the call, someone asked about free cash flow. So I did want to ask if just to consider really for Mark Belge, the $1 billion versus the $1.25 billion. Obviously, it sounds like the majority of working capital benefits came through in fiscal 16 with some still in fiscal 17. Is that the main reason for cash flow being down? Also, looks like CapEx may be up a little bit year over year. Just trying to get a sense of what could be dragging down the cash flow over and above the working capital effect.
Yeah, Chris, that is the primary driver. That was probably $100 million of it. And then the other big thing we had this year is we actually had two significant size tax refunds that were what I'll call one time that were probably, you know, roughly the $100 million as well. So those would come out, and that kind of gets you back to the $1 billion versus this year.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ken Goldman with J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Richard, I think it was you. You mentioned coffee ticking up the last few days, but at least as we look at the charts, Robusta and Arabica, they're each up, you know, maybe 20% off their recent lows. So I'm just curious, can you talk about, or anyone really talk about, what you're seeing in the coffee commodity market, whether you think these current prices are reasonable, you know, given current supply demand dynamics, I guess, and sort of what your outlook is, you know, from here?
Yeah, Ken, I think Steve gave that comment. So
sure, okay, sorry.
The recent run-up, there's always volatility in the coffee business. We are fortunate to have teams on the ground and offices in both the two largest markets of Brazil and Vietnam. And so, again, the coffee is relative to where we're priced to, relative to where we're promoted to. And then if our teams on the ground in those markets look at the coffee crop, there's been some weather noise in the last day or two that have driven it up, but it does appear, I think our opinion is, there's going to be a great Arabica crop this year. And so we think that coffee will trade in a price range that supports where we're priced between our position and our opinion. The good thing about this business is we have pricing capabilities here. And not only do we have good coverage, but we have the ability to move price should we need to. So we feel pretty good about the Arabica crop as it goes forward. Robusta might be a little tighter, but we think the Arabica crop is going to be a big one this year, and pricing should be reasonable.
Okay, that's helpful. And then my next question, the $50 million in additional efficiencies over the next few years, you know, frankly, that's a little bit of a smaller amount than what I had expected. It's a little bit smaller, at least on a percentage of sales, from what your packaged food peers have come up with. So, you know, I realize you're already lean, I guess, in some areas, headcount and so forth, but as we look at this, what's holding this number back from being as high as what we've seen, what you've seen, what Accenture's seen, right, from, I guess, some of your other food manufacturing peers out there?
Hey, Ken, this is Mark Smucker, and thanks for the question. I'll start, and then if anybody else wants to chime in. So a couple things. You know, if you think about our performance historically, it's been very good, and we have had historically a very strong cost discipline in multiple areas of our business. Part of what we've embarked on, which really was the catalyst, was the Big Heart acquisition, was to think a little bit deeper about our overall cost savings initiatives and how we might maybe do a little bit better. You are right that our productivity measures versus our peers are probably better in many cases, and we are generally leaner, I would say, than some of our peers. But having said that, we have an obligation, obviously, to our shareholders to make sure that we have the best cost discipline that we can have. And so what we've been doing, and this is part of the explanation of the $50 million, is on an ongoing basis, making sure from a continuous improvement that we have the discipline in our supply chain, our operations, our purchasing, and longer term as we think about how do we get more efficient in trade, all of those things should help drive what I would call some incremental savings to the bottom line. So it isn't, we don't think about it as a one-time benefit, but we are comfortable that we can at least deliver that, and then beyond these next couple of years, we should be able to continue to deliver annual cost savings objectives, which we hold our teams to. The good news about that is it is, as Richard mentioned, it is allowing us to invest in enhanced capabilities, and in at a very high level, what those capabilities are focused on is getting better at engaging with our consumer and getting better at our engaging with our retail customers. And so, you know, strategically, having the right balance between our leading number one brands, which are really the engine that fuels our growth, as well as having the right emerging brands in our portfolio, is part of that strategy. And so, making sure that we have dollars that can fund those enhanced capabilities, both in consumer engagement and customer engagement, is really going to help drive our growth, both top and bottom line, long term.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason English with Goldman Sachs. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I wanted to stick on coffee for a minute. You mentioned in your prepared remarks moderation in terms of competitive activity. I was hoping you could expound on that a little bit more in terms of where you're seeing the moderation. And then also, as part of your prepared remarks, you talked about sharpening price points on some of your businesses. I think you mentioned like Folgers, King Cups, Dunkin'. How do we foot those two in terms of moderation of competitive activity juxtaposed with what sounds like a bit more competitive activity coming from you?
Jason, hi, Steve Oakland. I'll try to touch on that. I think it's difficult to paint the coffee category with one brush competitively. I think the prepared remarks probably were focused more on our mainstream red can business, right? And I do think we've seen, with the Arabica falling, with the coffee prices falling where they are, we have found that price points have gotten down into those ranges where it motivates both the competitor and the consumer and the customer, right? So all of us are in price points that really work, okay? And so we're back in that zone, and I think everybody's operating in that zone. Having said that, I would argue that the premium segment was maybe the most competitive we've ever seen it last year. And so the Dunkin' Bank business, as you know, early in the year had a couple of tough quarters, and we've talked about how we leaned into that in the fourth quarter. Premium green, for a whole other discussion, but green coffee is not all the same. The coffee that goes into a lot of premium coffees has a much longer supply chain. You might expect lower, you know, coffee costs to impact us at different timing based on the type of green that it is. So in the fourth quarter, that we were in a position to support that, we did, and it has responded. So if you think about it, the core red can pricing had moderated, competitive set had moderated. The premium business probably is in that space now. And the last piece will be K-Cups, and we're going to lean into K-Cups. The proliferation of K-Cups has caused that whole segment to be competing for a slower growth pace. And one of the levers that's been used in there is price. We're able now to compete in that area. So that's for maybe the last piece of the puzzle. And we feel good about the plan we've put in front of you today. Will give us the dollars to support that and return that business to growth.
Got it. That's really helpful. Thank you for that. One more question, then I'll pass it on. I wanted to switch gears and talk about pet real quick. First, the what was it, roughly 3% organic sales growth. If possible, could you give us a break on volume and price for the quarter? And then your expectation of organic growth as we go into next year. Any color in terms of what you're expecting between premium snacks and mainstream would be really helpful. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, this is Mark Belgia. You know, regarding the first part of that question, unfortunately, because last year's fourth quarter was split ownership, that breakdown isn't quite as easy as it might sound to be. I will tell you, though, now that we're all on the same system as of March 1, and obviously in fiscal 17, we'll have that full line of analysis for all of this. So, Barry, I don't know if you could add anything, but from just the absolute numbers, I think that's probably the case.
I think you, the color you provided, Mark, is the best we can do at this point. Just to add, Jason, as far as our growth expectations for next year, as you know, our snack business has tremendous momentum behind it. So we expect our snack business to be at high single-digit growth next fiscal year, specifically with our Milk-Bone and our Pepperoni brands. On the pet specialty side of the business, we're lapping the expanded distribution last year in the pet specialty channel. But we would expect mid-single-digit growth this coming year as we will launch a national advertising campaign behind the Natural Balance brand. We also, there are two major retailers in pet specialty, but there's also a significant amount of sales that move through the independent trade. We have a push behind our Nature's Recipe brand. We think there's some real opportunities there. That's our gateway specialty brand. So we see some growth there. And then also our snacks play a significant role in pet specialty. So our widely distributed brands, there's some tremendous growth opportunity there. Food is going to be the lower growth this year as far as the portfolio is concerned. You know what our challenges were this past year, specifically with Kibbles and Bits. We are encouraged that we've actually seen negative consumption trends start to decelerate. At the end of this last fiscal year, we've put some bonus bags into the market. You're going to see more of those going into market in June. So a lot of effort stabilizing our dry dog food business and trying to just get that business back where it needs to be. So that provides the color you were looking for?
Yes, very helpful. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alexia Howard with Bernstein. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Hi. So a couple of questions about your e-commerce strategy and China investment. We started talking about the e-commerce strategy at the Investor Day last year. Are you able to dimensionalize how big that is for you as of now, how fast it grew last year? I presume the key categories in there are probably coffee and pet food. Which one of those is bigger? We'd just like to hear some color on that because we don't see that in the measured channels. And then you mentioned China investment. Can you just give us a little bit of color on how much you're spending over there now, what the strategy is over time? Thank you, and I'll pass it on.
Alexia, this is Mark Smucker. I'll start. Your first question, just as it relates to e-commerce, is that you're right. We're a little bit underdeveloped versus our peers in that space. And so as I talked to Ken's question earlier, relative to investments and what we're trying to amp up, that is one of those things. And so not to get into too much specifics, but as we think about, we actually have just reorganized some of our commercial functions that would include sales and some of our marketing areas, but also in the digital space, we have actually beefed up our capabilities there and are currently in process of reevaluating our total e-commerce strategy and how we better serve our e-commerce customers. And when we think about e-commerce, that includes both the digital-only retailers like Amazon, as well as our brick-and-mortar customers that have a significant online presence as well. So a little bit of a general answer, but suffice it to say that it is on our radar screen and it is a priority for us to continue to develop that business.
And then on China?
On China, I think you asked. So just in terms of sort of the financial impact, you know, I would say it's about 3 to 5 cents for the current year in fiscal 17.
And any color on exactly what's happening out there after the initial foray out there a few years ago?
Yeah, Alexia, it's still a little bit early for us, I think, to be giving too many details in that area. We've talked about the fact that we have had a minority investment in an oatmeal business there, and that business has continued to grow year over year, and so we've been pleased with that minority investment. As it relates to other things, I think it's just a little bit early for us to give any specifics.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mario Contreras with Deutsche Bank. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Mario.
So I wanted to go back to some of your comments from your analyst day last year with respect to coffee, some of the caution around, you know, getting back to fiscal 2014 coffee EBIT levels not until 2019. Some of the reason for that was related to investment around the perfect measures. So obviously you've already, you know, achieve that goal of getting to the profit recovery, but wanted to understand, you know, how the investment is going in perfect measures. Is that still a major focus point for you guys?
Hi, Mario. With regard to perfect measures, I think we still think it has the potential and still feel great about it. I'll tell you, the reason you put things in lead markets or in test markets is to learn, and we learned a lot. And our trial numbers, candidly, were not what we needed them to be, but our repeat numbers were fantastic. And so it tells us that we probably got the positioning a little wrong, we probably got some of the initial communication a little wrong, but we got the concept right. And so this year we're gonna relaunch that with a little better packaging, a little better messaging, and we're gonna. It's a heavy capital investment because the technology is unique, and we want to make sure we get it just right before we lean into it on a more national scale. We still think the concept has a lot of legs, but we're probably a year behind where we hope to be at this point. Those investment numbers are baked into the numbers and the guidance that that Mark gave earlier. So continued investment in that.
Okay. And then it had been mentioned a couple of times that increased marketing spending and advertising is included in the guidance for this year. Is there any way you can quantify, you know, roughly what that's going to be in terms of either a dollar or a percent increase?
Yeah, it's going to be up high single digits, which equates to about $40 million.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Pablo Zunick with SIG. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. Look, a couple of questions on coffee for Steve, and then I'll have a follow-up on pet food. Steve, so, you know, Starbucks, Howard Schultz there in January, he talked about pretty much implied to threaten to walk away from Keurig job. And then in the April call, he came out and said, you know, at least three or four times in the conference call that they had been able to renegotiate terms at very, very favorable terms with Keurig, and that those terms gave them also more flexibility. So I'm wondering here, you know, if Starbucks can do that with job, why can't Smuckers? So if you can comment on that. I'm just surprised that they were able to renegotiate terms now there was a change in ownership there, and apparently you haven't.
Sure.
And related to that, I understand the idea of sharpening price points for Folgers in K-Cups. The category has been sticky, of course, while, you know, ground moves quite a bit. But as you do that, I would expect other competitors to also cut prices in their K-Cup brands, and then K-Cups as a category would become not sticky, but pass through as ground. So I see a bit of a risk there. If you can comment on that, please. Thanks.
Sure. I guess I wouldn't take the assumption that we haven't done the same kind of work on our K-Cup contract and our relationship with JV, because we have a legacy relationship with JV from the Sara Lee acquisition several years ago, and now from the Keurig Green Mountain. So the fact that maybe we're a little less public about some of that stuff, I wouldn't assume that the same things aren't going on. So just different companies manage those things differently, right? So, you know, that process is in process. And we feel good about that relationship. They are committed to have the major brands in the category in their system. And, you know, we read the same things you read. So, you know, our assumptions going into those negotiations, our assumptions are similar to yours. So we feel fine there. And with regard to K-Cups, if you dig a little deeper into the IRI or the Nielsen data, you'll see that K-Cups, although we don't pass through green, because green's kind of a small portion of the overall cost structure, it's become maybe the most promoted category in total coffee. So that's the highest reliance. Each one of those brands relies very heavily on promotion. So maybe I'm not clear enough when I talk about leaning in. We've leaned in on our promotional price point mostly, and so those promotional price points are basically down a dollar a box from where they used to be. It's still a very profitable business, but that migration has already, that train's already left. So we are where we are. We might have been a little late to follow because of the momentum we had from the Dunkin' business.
Understood. And just a quick follow-up there. So your K-Cup margins would be lower than your ground coffee margins, right?
Yes, a little bit. Right. Yes, a little bit. Our ground coffee margins are obviously, because of our scale, very, very good. And our K-Cup margins are, although good by consumer product standards, by company standards, aren't quite at that level.
Thank you. And then just a follow-up on pet food. I guess it's been touched upon already, but can you tell us, where did the mix end after the, you know, the decline in dry dog and growth in snacks and specialty? If you can just give us, you know, what's the mix, you know, on a run rate at the moment. And related to that, if you can also comment on the channel mix, because, you know, we tend to think that snacks and specialty products are mostly in the specialty channel, but just remind us of where you are. If I'm looking at the FDM data from IRI or Nielsen, you know, what percentage of your pet food business is that and where are you in specialty? If you can provide that roughly on a current run rate, not what it was on average in 16. Thanks.
So you're looking for the channel mix. I just want to make sure we understand the question. You're looking for the channel?
Well, I'm asking two different questions in the case of pet food, right? I mean, because obviously you've explained that snacks and specialty are doing well in terms of your natural organic brands, are natural balance, and the other brands are doing well, and dry is not doing so well. So I'm just trying to understand where did the sales mix end in terms of products in fiscal year 16? And then it's a separate question, isn't what is the channel mix, right? Because, some of us, and dry dog is also sold in the specialty channel, right? And snacks are sold in both. Natural brand, your natural balance brand is only sold in specialty. I understand that. But I'm just trying to get a bit more color in terms of what's your current product mix, and separate, what's your current channel mix, if you can provide that.
Okay, so from a channel perspective, of our total business, about 20% of our business is in the pet specialty. And then Mark, do you want to take
Yeah, probably this is Mark Bell. Just to make sure, again, I think I'm understanding your question, and it goes back to a little bit earlier when one was asked. If you look at the mix of product, okay, we benefit from a mix perspective. So where the growth has occurred, as Barry described, from a channel perspective, we're also benefiting from a product mix perspective. So whether it's specialty or snack, or even cat probably more than dog, those are positive of mix benefits. Obviously, Kibbles and Bits is a heavy product. It's a lot of volume. So that's where it's negative. So it's a very positive mix story, a negative overall volume story because of the dry dog side of the equation.
Sorry to insist, but so, you know, dry dog would be what percentage of sales now on a run rate now?
Yes, 10, about 10% of total sales.
Thank you. That's good.
And the only other thing I'd reiterate, because I do think this gets lost occasionally, because particularly as I've had these conversations over the last few quarters, clearly Kibbles and Bits has been challenged. But when you look at our food business, the cat food side of the business is a little bit larger and has done okay. So it has balanced out a little bit. So while not trying to downplay the impact of the kibbles and bits and the volume and what it's had over the course of the year, the cat food performance has allowed us to manage through the overall food a little bit more than maybe the takeaway would be.
The only other thing I would add, this is Mark Smucker, is just reminding everyone that the brands that participate in those two channels are very different. It's very similar to the natural space in human food, where you've got the natural channel with the Whole Foods and the Sprouts and the like. In general, there is not a lot of overlap in the brands, so the brands tend to be unique to those individual channels.
Thank you, Arden.
This is Richard, and just adding to that for a second, you know, just any acquisition that we've made, and again, this acquisition is only 18 months old. Once we've integrated these businesses with our sales teams, we've seen some opportunities and channels where our existing sales team has said, hey, we're kind of weak in this channel, and with the relationships we have with these customers, we can really build the business. And that takes us a little while to identify that and then build those additional sales with those customers, and we're just in the process of doing that. So we're pretty optimistic about finding those key customers that we can build our business with, and so we should see some more growth this year in a number of those channels. Don't you agree with that?
I do, Richard, and just maybe to add on to the Meow Mix conversation is some of our best innovation this year is against the Meow Mix brand, and to your point, our sales team has done an outstanding job getting acceptance of that product in the market, and especially in the grocery channel. So, you know, where we have an outstanding sales team that can execute there. So, again, to Mark, to your point, Meow Mix is one of our largest brands in our portfolio, and with some of that innovation, we see some nice growth coming from that brand this year.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Matthew Granger with Morgan Stanley. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the question. I guess I just wanted to follow up on the net sales growth expectation and just try and dig in a little bit more at the segment level. Thank you for the commentary on pet. But I guess, Mark Belgia, is there any more visibility you can give us on that 1% ex-divestiture sales growth, how FX plays into that, and how we should be thinking about it by segment across the rest of the business?
I guess what I'd say, Matt, is that the coffee pricing would be about a point to the overall company, so you can kind of dollarize that to get how much the coffee would be. That's by far the biggest driver from the downside. So if you take the milk loss, $150 million I mentioned earlier, and then you know, the 1% of sales, so call it, you know, somewhere between $70 and $90 million on coffee pricing, that's the two big negatives. So if you just do the math and kind of, you know, attribute it to the rest of the business, that'll give you a sense. Obviously, the FX having a little bit of effect, but it's actually not—it's not a big driver in the overall 1% decline to total net sales.
Okay. All right. That helps. Thanks. And I guess just really quick follow-up on the Dunkin' K-Cup issue. You talked about some of the untapped adjacency opportunities and flavorings and line extensions. Your market share is sort of stabilized over the past 6 months, and it's pretty close to where your share is in roasting ground right now. Can you just give us a sense of sort of where you see, you know, in terms of growth opportunities, how much of that is dependent on holding that share, participating in category growth, as opposed to continuing to push share higher into that high single-digit range, and what you think is feasible?
Matthew, I think it'll vary by business. I think there's still runway for the Dunkin' business. There's some core flavors on Dunkin', and Dunkin' tends to be a more flavor-driven business. So there's some new item opportunity on the Dunkin' brand. And then, quite frankly, now that the Folgers brand is in the right price points, getting the right support both from the retailer and the consumer acceptance, it'll be better execution of our promotion strategies on Folgers. So we'll execute better on Folgers. We'll launch new items in Dunkin' is the plan.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Akshay Jagdale with Jefferies. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for the question. Two questions. One on coffee. Can you just explain to us or break out of the 18% growth that you saw in operating income or segment operating income, how much of that was a result of pricing net of commodity costs? And you know, what is the general expectation for pricing net of commodities for 17? That's the first question, and then I have a follow-up on pet.
I would say it's a balance. I would say part of it is pricing, and, you know, the timing of the pricing is important to think about. We talked, I believe, in our first quarter call a year ago that we leaned into, we took pricing early. We had good coverage, and we had an opinion of the market that we were going to get that money back in green, which we did in the fourth quarter. So in the fourth quarter, obviously, green pricing to cost was a bigger impact. But we sort of spent that money up front. So I would say it's a combination of that. Green pricing, when you get your number one, your high-volume items, when you get volume up on those canisters in our facilities too, it falls to the bottom line. So that's very efficient for us. So, Mark, I know Mark's digging for the exact percentage number as we speak, but it's a balance between the volume that generated and the implications of that volume all the way through the system on Redcan and then the pricing.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit heavier on the price cost, maybe two-thirds, one-third-ish.
Yeah.
But, again, I think that goes back to what you said, Steve, quite a while ago. It was just sort of the way that the timing on the price was.
And the volume allowed us to bring more green in at the end, and the green at the end was more favorable. So it's really hard to get it down to the knit on that because you recognize those PPVs when the green comes in, and if your volume's up, you bring more of the green in. So
two-thirds of the operating profit growth year-over-year in 16 was commodity price?
Yeah, the numbers that we just quoted were quarter.
Fourth quarter, right?
Yeah. Was your question on the full year or just the quarter?
On the full year. Sorry, that was on the full year.
Okay, it's probably a little more 50-50-ish there.
Yeah, 50-50 on the year, and it was back-end loaded because of the timing of the green.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were asking specifically the quarter.
No, and then on pet, sorry, excuse my voice. On pet, can you give us a little bit more color on the quality of earnings? You know, what happened with gross profit growth for the year, and what's your expectation next year? Thanks.
The quality of the earnings, and I'll start, Barry, if you want to jump in. If you look over the course, I mean, this quarter specifically, we knew marketing was going to be down from a little bit from where it was because of the timing of spending its new product. But we also had the synergy recognition, which picked up in the latter part. So if you go back to what we said in the early part of the year, we expected a quarter-over-quarter improvement on margin, which we delivered on in Q2, 3, and 4. I think from a cost perspective going forward, you know, their costs align very similar to what we see in our consumer food. So, you know, the grains continue to be favorable. I think as Barry mentioned, you know, we are going to continue bonus bags and things like that that might have a little bit of effect on gross profit. But and then, of course, I think as we've said over time, of the three segments of the business, the natural has the lowest profitability, and I think as Barry and team work, and as well as we integrate that into the overall Smucker company, there's probably an opportunity there as well.
Absolutely, Mark. Yeah, no, our quality of earnings are solid for F17. As we think about mix, too, just as our snacks continue to drive the business, that is where the strongest margins on the business are as well. You know, we've seen, like, even cat snacks, small category, but tremendous upside there. So, no, I think we have very solid quality of earnings for next year. We haven't made any significant cuts to get to our growth number for next year, year over year.
And just one last one for Mark. You talked about organizational structural change. Can you give us some more color on that? Thanks.
Hey, Akshay, Mark Smucker. Not really. I don't think we really can give you any more color other than to say that, you know, as we – this was a huge year, and not only did we make the largest acquisition in our history – but that acquisition was, again, the catalyst to sort of think about things like, are we going to market in the most efficient way? Do we have the right capabilities to engage our consumer and our customer? You know, we recently opened our, innovation center, which is very much all about our customer retail partners. And so the long and short of it is, as we looked at our organization, we took some opportunity across not only our commercial functions, which would be sales and marketing, and thinking about how we would organize those differently, but we looked across our supply chain network, our finance organization, some of our administrative functions as well, just to make sure that we were running them in the most efficient way. I would say that one of the key things is that we've, as I mentioned in the script, we have an individual from Big Heart who is leading our growth and innovation organization, and so we are putting sort of a renewed focus on, not that we haven't, we've done a good job on innovation, but making sure that our muscle, where we're building muscle, is really around innovation longer term and making sure that our understanding of the consumer is sharp and that we can act against insights that that we are learning about the consumer as we go forward. So I think that's probably it.
Thank you. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Farha Aslam with Stephens Inc. Your line is open.
Good morning. This is Gregory Knapp for Farha. I just have a quick question. Sort of given sort of the excellent cash flow and success taking down leverage, can you share with us whether there may be opportunities for further M&A and just your view on the M&A environment right now?
Yeah, this is Mark Valdez. I think I'll start, and Richard or Mark, if you want to add more from a strategic perspective. But as we look at our deployment of cash coming out of the deal last year, we obviously emphasized the importance of paying down debt over the course of 3 to 5 years, which we've made great progress on. And as I said earlier, it allowed us to get back into repurchasing shares. We feel very comfortable with the $1 billion of free cash flow that we'll be able to continue that debt pay down plan, obviously continue our dividend payout policies. And it allows us a little bit of flexibility as the strategic options come in. So whether that's M&A, again, I don't think we're looking at a huge transformational like a pet, with, at least from a leverage perspective. But certainly there's M&A opportunity as well as buybacks. And I think, buybacks are situational. So we traditionally do not build that into our plan. But if you ask me what is one of the opportunities for hitting the upside of that range, you'd have to throw buybacks as an opportunity in there.
Yeah, and this is Richard. Just strategically, acquisitions is a key factor of our growth over long term. And so we still continue to look for those opportunities, and the fact that we're now in the pet food business gives us another lake to fish in, and so we'll continue to look there, and again, those may not be strategic in the short term, but they may be more bolt-ons and smaller acquisitions, but they could be. So anyway, it's just a short answer, but always important to us.
Lines are in the water.
Got it. And is there a target leverage ratio that you would feel comfortable stabilizing at?
Target leverage ratio.
Well, what we said is that, it's been a little bit of maturation for us as a company. We were always very conservative, and I think now for 3 times we know is a pretty good number to work around. We've been pretty vocal to that in the last 6 to 9 months. As we get closer to that 3 times, it just opens up the door a little bit more.
Got it. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chuck Cerakoski with North Coast Research. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. Great quarter.
Thank you,
Chuck.
If you guys are looking at your largest customer, how much of their improvement in sales is reflected in some of the volume improvement you've seen, especially with regard to promotional and repricing activity?
This is Richard. First of all, it always helps when your customers are happy and doing well, any customer. And so we're glad to see that they've kind of turned the corner, and that's great. But they didn't drive our growth. This growth is broad-based. So that was not driving this.
Mm-hmm. And hi, Chuck, Steve Oak. We have brands like Folgers that index really, really well there. And those teams are working together very strongly to participate in that, or like to help drive their category growth. But I would argue that the other traditional retailers, and we typically don't name them, but the top 10 retailers, if you looked at our top 10 list, our numbers are pretty good across that whole top 10 list. But we're pleased to see those guys do well. I mean, we all as an industry need them to do well long term.
And when you look at how consumers are spreading their money across your brands, premium and mainstream, what does that tell you about where the consumer's head at is right now?
Well, I think the consumer's still somewhat cautious. And the great thing about our brands is our brands are pretty well positioned to supply all of our consumers. And so it is a cautious world out there, and we're still a good value. I mean, whether it's Folgers or whether it's Jif or whether it's Smucker's, it's a good value to the consumer. So
in our industry, Richard's had a commodity price environment that's allowed us to maintain our margins and reflect those prices to the customer base. So, you know, we've all enjoyed not just coffee, but the other commodities have been in a place where we've been able to market the brands, provide great price points, and innovate, right? So we've got innovation, regardless of the business, and things that are very high mix and high cost, and then provide items in all of our brands and all of our businesses to the discount channels, to the growth, to the dollar industry, and those places. So we've been able to participate across the spectrum of channels pretty well. The cost base today, and as we look forward, looks like it's going to help us do that.
And Chuck, this is Mark Smucker. Just to reiterate, you know, making sure that we are developing and growing our key mainstream brands, but also making sure that we have the right, you know, the True Roots, the Sahali, the Natural Balance. Those are brands that aren't necessarily as big, but certainly serve a consumer need and are important to our portfolio.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rob Dickerson with Consumer Edge Research. Your line is open.
Thanks a lot. Just a clarification question, and more for Mark. So it sounds like you said in your commentary that adjusted operating profit will be growing about 4%. And then I know if you kind of like use that 116.6 and your diluted shares outstanding, that implies about another 2.5%. So that gets me to 6.5% EPS growth in 17. Is the assumption here that, you know, there are other kind of below the line, like the tax rate could be a little bit better, interest rate comes down a little bit, I mean, or the interest expense comes down a little bit. And then lastly, you know, if we look at the shares you bought back in Q4, really in fiscal 16, I mean, that's the most amount you've ever spent on a buyback, outside of fiscal 14. So could there be, you know, additional cash outlays in 17 to incremental buybacks, even though you might not have as many of the one-time benefits on your working cap? Thanks.
Hey, Rob. So a couple things. I think the way you're thinking about it from a percent increase is pretty much in line. The simple math would say 4% plus operating profit growth, 3% shares, and a point tax and interest. So that kind of gives you the 8%. In terms of buyback, what we've guided and directed, and we have conversations particularly with the rating agencies, we kind of use the 2% as a long-term model. So that's a 2% buyback. So obviously at 116 million shares, that's 2.2 million shares. So that, as I said on the earlier question, we don't factor that into our plans. I would say our cash deployment would allow a portion of that, maybe not the whole 2%, without pushing the leverage target we're going after. But certainly, and again, it's situational, so I don't want to sit here and say we're going to go out and buy it, but if the opportunity were right, I believe we have the cash to do it, and it obviously, you know, would be incremental. Certainly when we do it in the year, we'll have less of an impact as we move, you know, further into the year. But you know, that's the beauty of getting the leverage to where we want it to be, it's some flexibility.
Okay, great. And then just a quick follow-up. On the 4% on the operating profit growth, if I heard you correctly, you said your coffee expectation is about the same. to flat. Consumer, you know, should be down a little bit just because, or mostly driven by milk. And then pets up mid-single digits. So, you know, if I kind of do that quick math, I'm getting to probably, I'd say, sub 4%. So, you know, I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, how you're, or how I should be thinking about each of the segments' growth relative to kind of this rolled up 4% number. Thanks.
Well, I think you will have some segment profit growth that will be a little less than 4% because, as we said in our scripted comments, our SD&A is going to be flat year over year. So some of that SD&A clearly goes up into the businesses, but also some of it falls below in what we would call admin support, but it's below the segment profit. So you need a little bit of that benefit to get to the 4% on an operating profit growth perspective. So you're right, there's a little bit. But again, to go back, part of their reason is because we put $40 million in marketing in there. So, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't have a P&L impact, but just to make sure we're all clear on why that is the case.
Right. So, and then in a bigger picture, right? I mean, if we kind of go back to the analyst day and how you're investing for growth, et cetera, so the net of all this is, you know, you have some upside on the corporate side. You're investing a bunch back, but you're not investing it all back so that you can still squeeze out, you know, kind of this, you know, 3-4% operating profit growth. That's the goal internally and externally.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, the other comment on the 4%, again, it gets lost a little bit because we're saying that the buyback is offsetting the milk profit loss. If you strip out the milk profit that we incurred in the first 8 months of fiscal 16 that we owned the business, we're actually growing operating income at 6%. So we're offsetting it, so we're being negatively impacted when you look at it on a reported basis. But if you strip that out, we're actually up plus 6.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. I will now turn the conference call back to management to conclude.
Thank you very much. This is Richard. I just wanted to close by saying that I've never been as optimistic about our business, our brands, our employees throughout the company, the best in the industry, and the leadership team, especially the new leadership team we have. I just think we're in a great position, and I want to thank everybody and thank our employees for the wonderful job they're doing, and thank all the people on the phone for paying attention, asking great questions. So thank you, and more to come. Best is yet to come.
Thank you, Richard. This is Mark Smucker. Just to echo Richard's comments, appreciate, of course, Richard's support, but thank all of you on the phone for your time today and your thoughtful questions. And again, just our employees, the phenomenal job that they have done to deliver this incredible year. And the future is bright, so just all of the tremendous efforts that has taken place this year and going forward, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to access this rebroadcast after this live call, you may do so by dialing 855-859-2056 or 404-537-3406 with a passcode of 103-655-64. This concludes our conference call for today. Thank you all for participating and have a nice day. All parties may now disconnect.